Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
It is 105. You are listening to the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It is 81 degrees right now, and it is a beautiful Minnesota day. I tell you, it is not too hot, not too cool. You can go out with your shorts. You can take a walk. You can bike. Or you can get over to where I am. I'm at the Minnesota African-American Heritage and Gallery. I'll be broadcasting the show live until 3 o'clock. They are here. They are open. My son, Andrew, read his autism children's book. Andrew does his dance from the gallery this morning, and before and after, my kids were just fascinated by the exhibits and all of the things that they have curated about Minnesota's Black history. These are things that you are not going to find in a history book, but your children should know. And I learned so many things that I didn't know about great Minnesotans who have made this state an amazing place, who have sacrificed and given so much of their lives and of their time and talent so that this state can have be a beacon for equality. You know, we look at what is going on in the world today and how people are looking at Minnesota as a state where, you know, we have so much equity and so much togetherness, and we help each other and we work together on both sides of the aisle, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, putting partisan politics aside and working together to make Minnesotans have a better quality of life. That didn't start today. You know, as I look around at the gallery here in North Minneapolis, that started so many years ago with so many great African-American heroes and sheroes who sacrificed their time and their lives, like Dr. Josie Johnson and Nellie Stone Johnson and so many others. El Mahmoud Hakati, Spike Moss, who just got a street named after him. These people have been doing work for years and blazing a trail. And so I just encourage you this summer to bring your kids here and let them see the legacy that was started many, many years ago by these great African-American Minnesota history makers. Now, I had, you know, invited my sister to be on the show. She is an advocate for families who have angel children. But I already know before we get started, she wants to squeal and get excited because her nephew read his book this morning. I already know. You know, my sister has a topic that she's supposed to be talking about, but I know this is going to turn into two segments because, you know, I sent her a note because there's a research study and the University of Minnesota did about infant death, and that is her ministry. That is what she does for a living. She is a nurse by trade, but she has a ministry and a podcast about life after loss and how to help families recover through grief. But right now she needs to squeal because her nephew just read his book at the Minnesota African American Heritage and Gallery. So go ahead, girl. Go ahead. I'm going to just let you do what you... This is my sister, Darcia Handy, everybody. For anybody listening, this is my sister, Darcia Handy. She lives in League City, Texas. She's frequently here in the Twin Cities helping me. Last year, she put on a blood pressure screening for Black women over at Flavor Cafe for me. She was instrumental in helping me with African-American Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol, when all the African-American business owners descended on the Capitol. So she's in and out of the Twin Cities. So she's not unfamiliar with us and our community. She's excited because she knows how important this is for Andrew and how historic this gallery is and what an amazing opportunity this was for her nephew. So go ahead, girl. Just, yeah. Okay.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Minnesota. I miss Minnesota. You do. You're right. I absolutely love it. I am so proud of Andrew reading his book at the African American Museum. I'm going to have to put that on my list to come by when I come back to Minnesota. I'm just so proud of him. He's authored his book. He's read it, reading it. He's sharing it. And he's I like that he's doing autism awareness right alongside with you. And he's still a teenager. So for him to be so involved in being a teenager, I just think that's great. So, you know, I'm very excited for Andrew and you, of course. Yes, I'm very excited.
Yeah, but Andrew first, it sounds like.
It is. It's always the baby first.
But, you know, this is the thing that, that tripped me out today was, you know, usually when Andrew reads his book, it's babies, it's young people, it's Toddler Tuesday, or it's, you know, really young kids, because the book is geared, you know, from birth until about sixth grade, right? But today he was hanging out with a bunch of teenagers. And look, this would trip me out today. Is these kids were here, but they were mostly talking to him about how they could become authors too.
Oh,
so he's inspiring the next generation of writers and creators, because, you know, oftentimes we see people with their books, and, you know, the folks our age and older, you know what I mean? Yes. So these teenagers and young people hardly ever see a teen author, somebody who is their age and who looks like them. So he over here hanging out with about, you know, 15, 20 teenagers in addition to the small children. And, you know, the event was over. And I'm like, why are my kids still here? Well, they were just hanging out. They wanted to know, like, how do you get started? How long does it take? You know, what did you have to do? And tell me about a publisher. What's their job? And how do you sell the books? And how do you make money? And does it cost anything? And can you sell them on Amazon? And so, you know, these kids were doing their homework and their due diligence because they saw Andrew doing it. And they figured, well, if he can do it, he looks like me, then I can do it too.
And you opened the show talking about trailblazers. And look, you have one. You've raised a trailblazer. You've raised four trailblazers. Because even talking about the children and where they were to where they are now, where they're authors and they have podcasts, and Andrew being the big brother of the three babies with their autism, where they are now from where they started is just amazing. And he has a right to share that story and be proud. And I am so glad that he's a trailblazer, because look at what he's passing down. Mm-hmm. People of color, people who look like him, people in his age group, a lot of people have a book inside, but there's no one to bring that out. And they see him and they're like, hey, you know what? If he's doing it, I can do it. And he's sharing that information just like you. So kudos to both of you. I'm so proud.
Thank you. Okay, so we have to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to you about what I called you to talk about. Okay, because the University of Minnesota has this new study about geographic and racial imbalances as they investigate sudden unexpected infant death. More with my sister, Darcia Handy, the host of the Life After Loss podcast and Life After Loss Ministries, when we come back. When my sister, Darcia Handy's son, Aiden, died shortly after giving birth, she grieved, but then she gave her life to the mission of helping other angel moms and dads handle the heartbreak of losing a child. And I've just watched with great humility and gratitude at how she goes to funeral homes and helps to plan funeral arrangements with parents whose children died shortly after childbirth. Or she creates brochures for people who are going to the hospital thinking they are going to have a child and coming out and coming home to baby clothes in a room full of baby things, and they don't have a baby. And Darcia, I just remember you coming home without Aiden, and you said, you know, they didn't give you anything. You didn't even have a pamphlet. You went home without your baby and a house full of baby stuff.
Yes. It was devastating. And I feel for all of my angel moms and dads. I call it empty arms. You know, your body is still prepared to nurse. Your house is still ready. You know, you've done all your nesting and everything is ready. And then it's like, wait a minute, you know, someone's missing. And it's heartbreaking. It is. It took me years and years and years to gather my thoughts to a place to where I said, okay, I'm going to have to turn my misery into a ministry and help other women, because it still happens so often. There's still so much to be done with maternal and infant and pregnancy loss and help. It's just so much information that still needs to be shared. So I said, let me just take my experience and see how I can help others. And you're absolutely right. Brochures. I will hold hands with some mothers in virtually. I'm holding hands with them, you know, on Messenger or Facebook. I'm holding hands with them virtually when I'm not able to be there. Or I have parents contacting me who may have lost a child 40 years ago or 35 years ago. And they're like, thank you so much. You know, now I have an outlet. Now I have a group. Now I can talk to you. So it's very important to be there for families when they've experienced pregnancy and infant loss. So I take it very seriously. And as you stated, it is my passion. It is in my heart. And it's something that I've done for years. You know, I did it at work. I'm a funded grant writer, and I had a program. And I was devastated because of I was in the child fatality review team, where we reviewed all the deaths from birth to age 18. And my son's name was in that group. And it was just devastating for me. So I had to change careers at that point. But I continue to help families.
And when I saw this survey that the University of Minnesota recently did, I wanted to reach out to you and get your thoughts, because according to this survey that was put out just this month, 3,400 infants die suddenly and unexpectedly in the U.S. Mm-hmm. every year. But they're saying these tragic events do not fall evenly across populations. Deaths are notably higher mm-hmm. among indigenous and black infants compared with white infants. And rural areas have some of the nation's highest unexpected deaths. So if you are a black or indigenous person mm-hmm. and you are living in a rural area and you are pregnant, and you are mm-hmm. trying to have a healthy baby, the odds are stacked against you. Why are these rates so high?
These rates are so high because you just said it yourself. The odds are stacked against you. You know, oftentimes we go into communities with our own preconceived ideas about people. People tend to think that people who are African-American or minority, they just, you know, want to have a bunch of babies or a bunch of children and get on social services. That is not the case. They think that people who are in low-income areas, you know, why should we care about them? Why are they having babies that they're not going to be able to afford? That is not the case. So we have preconceived ideas already, and it's the medical community sometimes. And I'm not insulting physicians, but sometimes we do have our own prejudice against maybe income. We have prejudice against neighborhoods. We have prejudice against people. And when we see these things, we're like, okay, well, why would you get yourself pregnant if you can't take care of the baby? We hear that oftentimes, but that's not the case. We are judging people based on our own individual ideas. It's not the case. And oftentimes, these families, they don't realize that most states have a program that will help them when they're pregnant. There are Women, Infants, and Children's Program, which is WIC, that will help them to have nutritious meals while they're pregnant, and they'll even help the babies with nutritious meals through the first year of life. So a lot of programs that are available, but you said indigenous people and in some of the rural areas, they're not usually the education level is low, and they might not know that those services exist. So they don't know that those services are available. So how are they going to get those services if they don't even know that they're available? And I'll tell you this, a lot of people who say, hey, we're going to reach out to you, it's grassroots effort. You've got to go knock on doors and let people know services are available. But guess what? If you're in a neighborhood that you don't want to be in, or it's a group of people you don't care about, are you going to go to that neighborhood? Are you going to do the grassroots efforts and knock on that door and let those people know, hey, these services are available for you. We can help you with a healthy pregnancy. We can help you with monitor your child from birth to the first birthday. No, it deals with our own prejudices. It deals with racial. These are racial disparities. And this is another thing that I'm fighting for equality in healthcare, because sometimes we don't even realize it, that we have these ideas about people, preconceived ideas about people before they even show up. So who are they going to ask for help, and who's going to reach out to them? You know, it takes people like you who's doing this show to let them know, hey, there are services available for you. Hey, this report was done, and this information is not right. This is not fair. This shouldn't be happening in 2024 in what's supposed to be the greatest country in the world. But guess what? It is. Maternal health continues to plague us in our community. We're still losing mothers at birth, and we are still losing infants at birth.
How is it going to change? What needs to happen for it to change?
Education. And I will say this. I think that our OBGYNs should have a course in cultural diversity. Now, in so many professions, and you said I'm a nurse, I've had to take courses on cultural diversity. I've had to take ethic courses. I think those courses should be applied to the medical profession as well, because we do bring our own ideas into our professions. Even though we say we're not going to, or we don't want to, it happens. But you have to have, you know, something there that reminds you, oh, okay, I can't think of this person in this way. If you don't want to serve me, then don't come into my neighborhood to work. If you know that's not a group of people you want to work with, then why would you put a practice there? Or why would you work for the health department if you don't want to serve indigent patients? Or why would you want to work on the reservation if you don't want to serve Native Americans? Why would you go into a black community, into a health center there, if you don't want to serve the black community? Oftentimes, it's a salary, it's a paycheck. And what we have to remember, and this is something that I say every day as a nurse, we are looking at people, not numbers. These are people. You have to have a passion for people. And that's how it changes with education. You cannot take your own prejudice into your profession when you are serving women, infants, and children. You cannot do it, because they're dependent upon you. They're dependent upon you to educate them. They're dependent upon you to go over nutrition and tell them, hey, this is good for you while you're pregnant. They're dependent upon you to say, hey, don't give your baby cow's milk in the first year of life. Someone has to pick up that slack and to educate those communities. It's a grassroots effort. And it has to start with the education of the medical community, our doctors, while they're in school. You know, and I think when they do their residency, I think everyone should have to take a turn, you know, in a underserved area. I just think that it will bring out humility, because in nursing school, I'll share this with you. When I was in nursing school, someone asked, right before we started doing clinicals, they said, hey, when are we going to stop doing all this talking, and when are we going to go somewhere and do clinicals? So we were going to the hospital, and guess what? Our professor said, no, you know what? We're going to go to the nursing home first. And we did. That's what we did. And they told that staff, they're going to clean the patients. They're taking care of the patient all day. So we were doing the CNA work, certified nurse assistant. We were doing their work. Guess what? It made me appreciate being in the hospital, and it made me appreciate CNAs and everybody else that worked in the hospital with me when I got there, because I had to go and do it. I had to do the cleaning, and I had to take care of the patient. Well, that's what physicians need to do as well. They have to get their hands dirty a little bit. If you don't want to deal with the indigent population or people who need you, then go and open your practice in a wealthy area and deal with those people. But we have to take care of our populations who need us.
Yes, we do. And I'm so glad that you are doing that. You are doing that work. And I know when you've come to Minnesota, we've pulled you to do screenings for blood pressure and black women and education and training. And so if there's somebody who's listening, a doctor, a hospital system, and they say, you know what, we need somebody like that who is passionate, who speaks from experience, who've gone through it. You're not just talking about what you read in a book or what you were trained on or what you heard. You actually lost a child shortly after childbirth. You are a nurse. You work in healthcare. How can they reach you? How can they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through Facebook. I have Darcia Handy. I'm Darcia Handy on Facebook. They can reach out to me through my Gmail account, which is DarciaHandy@gmail.com. Let's say Facebook, Gmail. Oh, and I also have a Life After Loss podcast. I have my Facebook page, Life After Loss. They can reach me there as well.
Mm-hmm. And you always respond right away, because I know that you, families reach out to you right away.
Yes.
As soon as this happens. And there's no 9 to 5 on that. This happens at 2 in the morning. It happens at 3 in the morning.
Right.
It happens at 6 in the morning. And so you're there. So folks can always reach you on your social media, Darcia Handy. Very easy to find on Facebook. Also easy to find the Life After Loss podcast Facebook page and group, where it is a safe place to heal and grieve and cry. Darcia Handy, my sister, I thank you so much for talking to me today. It is a Saturday in Houston. I know this is when you do your errands and run out and visit our parents. But I just want to thank you for being on the show today and hanging out with me for a little bit.
Thank you. And congratulations again to you and Andrew. I'm just so proud. You know I am. I'm proud of both of you.
I know. I saw your Facebook post. I know. All right. Love you. We'll talk soon.
I love you too. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you all stick around. We've got more to come. I tell you what, my phone is blowing up. We've had some really good, informative chats with some great guests. And our conversations are so just real and authentic and engaging that folks forget that I'm actually working, and they are texting me now. Somebody wants to make sure to pass along my sister Darcia's information. They're saying, hey, what's the next time she's going to be out doing a training, or how can I hire her? And so I'm just reminding them how to spell her name, because somebody spelled the name wrong. And so I'm just letting them know, hey, it's Darcia. If you want to reach out to her and let her know that you need her services, and she will definitely reach back out to you right away. She has a commitment to helping parents whose children have died shortly after childbirth. And so I want to make sure that people are aware of that, because those calls and texts are coming in, and that is truly her ministry and what she does, not for a living, but that time that she gives away is volunteered. We are moving on. The train is on the track. We're moving on. It is 1:38. It is the Shaletta Show. I am still live at the Minnesota African American Heritage Museum and Gallery in Minneapolis on Penn Avenue. My son Andrew read his best-selling autism children's book. Andrew does his dance to teens and kids alike. Gave away a bunch of books, and if you want to get one for your library at home, your kiddo, it is available on Amazon. I know we all got the Prime, but I always tell people, please support our local bookstores. If you are in Stillwater, Gully Wobbles is there. If you are in St. Paul, Red Balloon Books has copies. And then Moon Palace Books in Minneapolis also has copies available. So please, please make your way over there. It does not have to be Autism Awareness Month for you to create awareness or acceptance for kids on the spectrum. Now, I got to tell you about speaking of kids and keeping them safe, the Minnesota Department of Health is working closely with Hennepin County Lead Removal Program. And what they're doing is they're working to provide information about the effects of lead poisoning in the home and how to identify and avoid it. And they also have other resources for home lead testing, as well as testing for children who may have been exposed to lead. Now, joining me is Duzong Yang, the lead and healthy homes educator for the Minnesota Department of Health. Duzong, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, tell us about your role. What is this lead healthy homes educator? What is that all about?
Yeah, so it's actually lead and healthy homes educator.
Okay.
And so basically, I create and manage our lead educational materials, including the translations. And we actually have 19 different languages available for our educational materials. Yeah, and then I also do outreach. I communicate with clinics, providers, local public health, and the community on childhood lead poisoning prevention and blood lead testing.
And, you know, I was just talking to Carla Bingham. She was here talking about the food scraps program in Washington and Ramsey County. And she was talking about all the languages that the information is available in. And Duzong, you know, one of the things that I keep preaching is that if you don't have it available in my language, then I don't think it's for me. Talk to me about how important it is to have this information available in multiple languages so that more Minnesotans can participate.
Yeah, it's definitely really important because we're serving our community. And if we don't have these resources for them, how are they going to get the resources, right? And mm-hmm. so if people don't see their language or materials in their language, then they can also, like, let us know and be like, hey, I don't see this language. Can you consider adding it? We can definitely do that.
Now, when we start talking about healthy homes, what exactly do we mean? Because for me, I think healthy homes, you know, I don't have any sharp objects out. You know, I make sure that, you know, we've got gates up and, you know, for the kids who have autism to stay away. You know, I got the hazardous stuff up high or locked in the cabinet. But, you know, I want to make sure that I understand what you're talking about. What qualifies as a healthy home? Because you're a healthy home educator.
Yeah, and so to me, it's a hazard-free environment where children can thrive and grow without putting them at risk for developing health problems. And this could be, like, in their own home, at a daycare center. It's just an environment where it's hazard-free.
And that is so important for children in their growth and development. And my listeners have heard me talk about lead paint hazards before. But one topic we haven't covered is how eating and a healthy diet can help reduce the negative effects of lead exposure, especially in kids. And Duzong, you and I both know it is so much easier to just run out here and get some fast food, mm-hmm. especially during summer times, because the schedule gets away. You know, we're managing the kids all day. It's just easier to run out and get a burger and some fries and a soda, a pop, or whatever. And, you know, we haven't really provided, you know, the basic food groups to our kids. I had to, when I knew you were coming on the show, girl, I had to convict myself and look back over the week and think, I have not made a carrot. I have not made a broccoli. I have not put any green beans in the steamer. And I have not done right by my kids. So I had to, like, get it together, because I knew I was going to be talking to you and I didn't want to have to embarrass myself.
I feel you. I'm the one that created the fact sheet for that. And so I have to remind myself to, you know, have fruits and vegetables on my plate, too. So I totally understand.
Yeah, and eating healthy, those balanced meals, you know, what should we be looking out for? Because, you know, I don't care how many times we talk about it, but we always have to remind ourselves about the iron and the calcium and how it helps our body, especially if, you know, we're living in an older home and, you know, it may contain lead paint.
Yeah, so lead actually can easily get into our bodies, like in our blood and bones, and so eating healthy, balanced meals that are rich in iron, calcium, and vitamin C regularly can help prevent lead from being absorbed into their blood and bones. And also, children with empty stomachs may absorb more lead than children with fuller stomachs. And so, you know, like, we really have to help our children eat regular balanced meals throughout the day for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and even snacks in between meals. So foods
now,
like... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, what kind of foods? That was my next question, girl. Get out of my head. Because, you know, we're not really looking at labels. We're just going through to the store. We're buying it. And I'm not saying that as parents, we're not being intentional, but we're busy. And so, you know, whatever information you can provide to us as we try to make sure our kids have that healthy breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it is really going to help us to become better parents and help them to be healthier.
Yeah, and so some examples of food that are rich in iron include red meat, fish, chicken, spinach. Food that are rich in calcium includes milk, yogurt, cheese, green leafy veggies. Foods that are rich in vitamin C include citrus fruits, bell peppers, broccoli, tomatoes. And those don't sound good for, you know, kids. They're not going to be like, "Ooh, I want tomatoes for snacks." So it's really hard and they're really picky. And some children also have like special dietary needs. And so if families, parents, they want more information about like what their child should eat, they should always consult with their doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But those are generally the things that, you know, should be on the plate.
Okay. Now, what are the tips? Because as a parent, I don't know it all. And I'm always looking for tips or tricks or good information to help me become a better parent. But what other tips can you provide for parents and caregivers who are concerned about lead exposure in their homes? I'm in North Minneapolis and there are some older homes here. And I've, you know, been talking about this and trying to champion this cause. And, you know, some of the church members that I have say, you know, I've been in this house forever. I never thought about it until I heard you talking about it on the radio, and I have my grandkids every summer and on weekends, and I need to make sure that I get my house tested. I get my house checked because I don't want anything to happen to my grandkids.
Mm-hmm. So you can lower the risk of lead exposure in your home by keeping your home clean. So things like washing your child's hand, face, toys regularly, learn how to properly clean up lead dust in their home using the wet washing method, using a HEPA filter vacuum to vacuum. And if they work with lead or have hobbies that work with lead, then they should be washing their clothes that they wear when they're working with lead separately from regular clothes. And then in between the work clothes and the regular clothes, they should be doing an extra rinse cycle. So those are just like a few tips that people can follow. We have more tips on our fact sheet, which is called Cleaning Out Lead Dust in Your Home, and that's on our website.
Okay, give me that website, because somebody's going to email me, somebody's going to call me, somebody's going to need that information, and I want to make sure that they have it.
Yeah, so it's health.state.mn.us/lead, or you can just Google Lead MDH, and it should be the first link on the web browser.
Oh, that is so amazing. Thank you so much, Duzong Yang, for being here. You have really blessed us with this information. I also want to remind people about the window replacement program. Can you talk to me about that? Because, you know, people know that they have lead in the home, especially folks in Hennepin County in those older homes that were built before, what, 1970 something. And they say, well, you know, what am I going to do? I don't have no money. I don't have no money to fix this. I don't have no money for no new windows. You know, I just got to ride this out. I'm on a fixed income, but there's a program that they can take advantage of, right?
Yeah, so it's a little different for counties throughout Minnesota, but for Hennepin County residents specifically, Hennepin County does have a lead prevention program for their residents. They offer free in-home screening, lead-safe classes so that you can learn how to safely clean and renovate your home. They also have funding that can help cover the cost of repairing or removing lead from their home, which also includes the window replacement. I believe it's like up to 15,000. But then there's an intake form that residents will have to fill out to see if they qualify. So they can just go on Hennepin County's website to fill out that form and to also get more information on eligibility.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for being here, giving us all this information. You have really been a blessing to our listeners, especially those with children, especially those in older homes, passing along this information to them. Duzong Yang, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show.
Yeah, no problem. And can I also mention one more thing before I go?
Sure, yeah.
So I just want to remind families that the only way to know if their children have been exposed to lead is to get a blood lead test. And okay. In Minnesota, we recommend that all children should be tested at age 12 months and 24 months. And if they haven't had one by the time they're age 3, or if their parents are concerned about lead exposure, they can talk to the doctors about getting one.
Yes, and you can do that at your annual checkup with your pediatrician. You know, before we send our kids back to school, a lot of us have to go get asthma action plans, medication forms, do those annual physicals, especially if they're going to be participating in sports. And that is a good time to get that done. Thank you for that reminder, Duzong.
No problem.
And you all stick around. We've got more to come. I'm coming out, baby. Oh, yes, I am coming out. Today is an amazing day. I'm coming out. That's my theme song, Josh. You just lit a fire under my butt.
Let's go.
I cannot wait to tell y'all this. I've been waiting to tell y'all this all morning long. I am in USA Today. Yes, USA Today. I got a call earlier this week from one of the reporters at USA Today, and she said, "We've seen your Spread Love with Locks program, Miss Brundage, how you are taking and buying these interior combination door locks that you found on Amazon for moms and dads who have kids with autism who wander to keep them safe from drowning, and we want to do a story about it." And I was like, oh, my God. Yes, yes, honey. So this morning at 7 o'clock when I woke up and I got on USA Today, guess whose big old face was on there? Mine. Yes, yes, that was me. Yes, that was me. And she just did this amazing write-up and article. Kudos to the writer, the columnist who did the story. But she did an amazing job sharing my family story. You know, about how, you know, we've got the 3 kids with autism, 4 total, 3 with autism, and how, you know, their journey and how Daniel used to wander. And, you know, we put the gates up, then he started crawling over the gates, and then we put the deadbolt up, and he was able to, you know, get the key and open it up. And then we put a latch on top and he popped the lock, and how, you know, I would, you know, have to have him hold me from the back while I wash dishes because I couldn't turn my back on him. And he would elope from the house and run down the street, and the neighbors would bring him back. And, you know, and so, you know, I found these interior combination door locks, and I've been buying them and going to different cities and donating them to parents who have kids with autism. And so that story is in USA Today. It posted this morning by Celine Martin. Look for it. It says, this Minnesota mother wants to save autistic children from drowning one city at a time. And the mother they are talking about, honey, is none other than me. We'll be back. It is 105. You are listening to the Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It is 81 degrees right now, and it is a beautiful Minnesota day. I tell you, it is not too hot, not too cool. You can go out with your shorts. You can take a walk. You can bike. Or you can get over to where I am. I'm at the Minnesota African American Heritage and Gallery. I'll be broadcasting the show live until 3 o'clock. They are here. They are open. My son Andrew read his autism children's book. Andrew does his dance from the gallery this morning, and before and after, my kids were just fascinated by the exhibits and all of the things that they have curated about Minnesota's Black history. These are things that you are not going to find in a history book, but your children should know. And I learned so many things that I didn't know about great Minnesotans who have made this state an amazing place, who have sacrificed and given so much of their lives and of their time and talent so that this state can have be a beacon for equality. You know, we look at what is going on in the world today and how people are looking at Minnesota as a state where, you know, we have so much equity and so much togetherness, and we help each other and we work together on both sides of the aisle, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, putting partisan politics aside and working together to make Minnesotans have a better quality of life. That didn't start today. You know, as I look around at the gallery here in North Minneapolis, that started so many years ago with so many great African-American heroes and sheroes who sacrificed their time and their lives, like Dr. Josie Johnson and Nellie Stone Johnson and so many others. Al Mahmoud Hakati, Spike Moss, who just got a street named after him. These people have been doing work for years and blazing a trail. And so I just encourage you this summer to bring your kids here and let them see the legacy that was started many, many years ago by these great African-American Minnesota history makers. Now, I had, you know, invited my sister to be on the show. She is an advocate for families who have angel children. But I already know before we get started, she wants to squeal and get excited because her nephew read his book this morning. I already know. You know, my sister has a topic that she's supposed to be talking about, but I know this is going to turn into two segments because, you know, I sent her a note because there's a research study and the University of Minnesota did about infant death, and that is her ministry. That is what she does for a living. She is a nurse by trade, but she has a ministry and a podcast about life after loss and how to help families recover through grief. But right now she needs to squeal because her nephew just read his book at the Minnesota African American Heritage and Gallery. So go ahead, girl. Go ahead. I'm going to just let you do what you... This is my sister, Darcia Handy, everybody. For anybody listening, this is my sister, Darcia Handy. She lives in League City, Texas. She's frequently here in the Twin Cities helping me. Last year, she put on a blood pressure screening for Black women over at Flavor Cafe for me. She was instrumental in helping me with African-American Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol, when all the African-American business owners descended on the Capitol. So she's in and out of the Twin Cities. So she's not unfamiliar with us and our community. She's excited because she knows how important this is for Andrew and how historic this gallery is and what an amazing opportunity this was for her nephew. So go ahead, girl. Okay.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Minnesota. I miss Minnesota. You do. You're right. I absolutely love it. I am so proud of Andrew reading his book at the African American Museum. I'm going to have to put that on my list to come by when I come back to Minnesota. I'm just so proud of him. He's authored his book. He's read it, reading it. He's sharing it. And he's I like that he's doing autism awareness right alongside with you. And he's still a teenager. So for him to be so involved in being a teenager, I just think that's great. So, you know, I'm very excited for Andrew and you, of course. Yes, I'm very excited.
Yeah, but Andrew first, it sounds like.
It is. It's always the baby first.
But, you know, this is the thing that, that tripped me out today was, you know, usually when Andrew Reese's book is babies, it's young people, it's Toddler Tuesday, or it's, you know, really young kids, because the book is geared, you know, from birth until about sixth grade, right? But today he was hanging out with a bunch of teenagers. And look, this would trip me out today. Is these kids were here, but they were mostly talking to him about how they could become authors too.
Oh,
so he's inspiring the next generation of writers and creators, because, you know, oftentimes we see people with their books, and, you know, the folks our age and older, you know what I mean? Yes. So these teenagers and young people hardly ever see a teen author, somebody who is their age and who looks like them. So he over here hanging out with about, you know, 15, 20 teenagers in addition to the small children. And, you know, the event was over. And I'm like, why are my kids still here? Well, they were just hanging out. They wanted to know, like, how do you get started? How long does it take? You know, what did you have to do? And tell me about a publisher. What's their job? And how do you sell the books? And how do you make money? And does it cost anything? And can you sell them on Amazon? And so, you know, these kids were doing their homework and their due diligence because they saw Andrew doing it. And they figured, well, if he can do it, he looks like me, then I can do it too.
And you opened the show talking about trailblazers. And look, you have one. You've raised a trailblazer. You've raised four trailblazers. Because even talking about the children and where they were to where they are now, where they're authors and they have podcasts, and Andrew being the big brother of the three babies with their autism, where they are now from where they started is just amazing. And he has a right to share that story and be proud. And I am so, so glad that he's a trailblazer, because look at what he's passing down. People of color, people who look like him, people in his age group, a lot of people have a book inside, but there's no one to bring that out. And they see him and they're like, hey, you know what? If he's doing it, I can do it. And he's sharing that information just like you. So kudos to both of you. I'm so proud.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so we have to take a quick commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to you about what I called you to talk about. Okay, because the University of Minnesota has this new study about geographic and racial imbalances as they investigate sudden unexpected infant death. More with my sister, Darcia Handy, the host of the Life After Loss podcast and Life After Loss Ministries, when we come back. When my sister, Darcia Handy's son, Aiden, died shortly after giving birth, she grieved, but then she gave her life to the mission of helping other angel moms and dads handle the heartbreak of losing a child. And I've just watched with great humility and gratitude at how she goes to funeral homes and helps to plan funeral arrangements with parents whose children died shortly after childbirth. Or she creates brochures for people who are going to the hospital thinking they are going to have a child and coming out and coming home to baby clothes in a room full of baby things, and they don't have a baby. And Darcia, I just remember you coming home without Aiden, and you said, you know, they didn't give you anything. You didn't even have a pamphlet. You went home without your baby and a house full of baby stuff.
It was devastating. And I feel for all of my angel moms and dads. I call it empty arms. You know, your body is still prepared to nurse. Your house is still ready. You know, you've done all your nesting and everything is ready. And then it's like, wait a minute, you know, someone's missing. And it's heartbreaking. It is. It took me years and years and years to gather my thoughts to a place to where I said, okay, I'm going to have to turn my misery into a ministry and help other women, because it still happens so often. There's still so much to be done with maternal and infant and pregnancy loss and help. It's just so much information that still needs to be shared. So I said, let me just take my experience and see how I can help others. And you're absolutely right, brochures. I will hold hands with some mothers in virtually. I'm holding hands with them, you know, on Messenger or Facebook. I'm holding hands with them virtually when I'm not able to be there. Or I have parents contacting me who may have lost a child 40 years ago or 35 years ago, and they're like, thank you so much. You know, now I have an outlet. Now I have a group. Now I can talk to you. So it's very important to be there for families when they've experienced pregnancy and infant loss. So I take it very seriously. And as you stated, it is my passion. It is in my heart. And it's something that I've done for years. You know, I did it at work. I'm a funded grant writer, and I had a program. And I was devastated because of I was in the child fatality review team, where we reviewed all the deaths from birth to age 18. And my son's name was in that group. And it was just devastating for me. So I had to change careers at that point. But I continue to help families.
And when I saw this survey that the University of Minnesota recently did, I wanted to reach out to you and get your thoughts, because according to this survey that was put out just this month, 3,400 infants die suddenly and unexpectedly in the U.S. Mm-hmm. every year. But they're saying these tragic events do not fall evenly across populations. Deaths are notably higher mm-hmm. among indigenous and black infants compared with white infants. And rural areas have some of the nation's highest unexpected deaths. So if you are a black or indigenous person mm-hmm. and you are living in a rural area and you are pregnant, and you are mm-hmm. trying to have a healthy baby, the odds are stacked against you. Why are these rates so high?
These rates are so high because you just said it yourself. The odds are stacked against you. You know, oftentimes we go into communities with our own preconceived ideas about people. People tend to think that people who are African-American or minority, they just, you know, want to have a bunch of babies or a bunch of children and get on social services. That is not the case. They think that people who are in low income areas, you know, why should we care about them? Why are they having babies that they're not going to be able to afford? That is not the case. So we have preconceived ideas already, and it's the medical community sometimes. And I'm not insulting physicians, but sometimes we do have our own prejudice against maybe income. We have prejudice against neighborhoods. We have prejudice against people. And when we see these things, we're like, okay, well, why would you get yourself pregnant if you can't take care of the baby? We hear that oftentimes, but that's not the case. We are judging people based on our own individual ideas. It's not the case. And oftentimes, these families, they don't realize that most states have a program that will help them when they're pregnant. There are Women, Infants, and Children's Program, which is WIC, that will help them to have nutritious meals while they're pregnant. And they'll even help the babies with nutritious meals through the first year of life. So a lot of programs that are available. But you said indigenous people and in some of the rural areas, they're not. Usually the education level is low, and they might not know that those services exist. So they don't know that those services are available. So how are they going to get those services if they don't even know that they're available? And I'll tell you this, a lot of people who say, hey, we're going to reach out to you, it's grassroots effort. You've got to go knock on doors and let people know services are available. But guess what? If you're in a neighborhood that you don't want to be in, or it's a group of people you don't care about, are you going to go to that neighborhood? Are you going to do the grassroots efforts and knock on that door and let those people know, hey, these services are available for you. We can help you with a healthy pregnancy. We can help you with monitor your child from birth to the first birthday. No, it deals with our own prejudices. It deals with racial. These are racial disparities. And this is another thing that I'm fighting for equality in healthcare, because sometimes we don't even realize it, that we have these these ideas about people, preconceived ideas about people before they even show up. So who are they going to ask for help, and who's going to reach out to them? You know, it takes people like you who's doing this show to let them know, hey, there are services available for you. Hey, this report was done, and this information is not right. This is not fair. This shouldn't be happening in 2024 in what's supposed to be the greatest country in the world. But guess what? It is. Maternal health continues to plague us in our community. We're still losing mothers at birth, and we are still losing infants at birth.
How is it going to change? What needs to happen for it to change?
Education. And I will say this. I think that our OBGYNs should have a course in cultural diversity. Now, in so many professions, and you said I'm a nurse, I've had to take courses on cultural diversity. I've had to take ethic courses. I think those courses should be applied to the medical profession as well, because we do bring our own ideas into our professions. Even though we say we're not going to, or we don't want to, it happens. But you have to have, you know, something there that reminds you, oh, okay, I can't think of this person in this way. If you don't want to serve me, then don't come into my neighborhood to work. If you know that's not a group of people you want to work with, then why would you put a practice there? Or why would you work for the health department if you don't want to serve indigent patients? Or why would you want to work on the reservation if you don't want to serve Native Americans? Why would you go into a black community, into a health center there, if you don't want to serve the black community? Oftentimes, it's a salary, it's a paycheck. And what we have to remember, and this is something that I say every day as a nurse, we are looking at people, not numbers. These are people. You have to have a passion for people. And that's how it changes with education. You cannot take your own prejudice into your profession when you are serving women, infants, and children. You cannot do it, because they're dependent upon you. They're dependent upon you to educate them. They're dependent upon you to go over nutrition and tell them, hey, this is good for you while you're pregnant. They're dependent upon you to say, hey, don't give your baby cow's milk in the first year of life. Someone has to pick up that slack and to educate those communities. It's a grassroots effort. And it has to start with the education of the medical community, our doctors, while they're in school. You know, and I think when they do their residency, I think everyone should have to take a turn, you know, in a underserved area. I just think that it will bring out humility, because in nursing school, I'll share this with you. When I was in nursing school, someone asked, right before we started doing clinicals, they said, hey, when are we going to stop doing all this talking, and when are we going to go somewhere and do clinicals? So we were going to the hospital, and guess what? Our professor said, no, you know what? We're going to go to the nursing home first. And we did. That's what we did. And they told that staff, they're going to clean the patients. They're taking care of the patient all day. So we were doing the CNA work, certified nurse assistant. We were doing their work. Guess what? It made me appreciate being in the hospital, and it made me appreciate CNAs and everybody else that worked in the hospital with me when I got there, because I had to go and do it. I had to do the cleaning, and I had to take care of the patient. Well, that's what physicians need to do as well. They have to get their hands dirty a little bit. If you don't want to deal with the indigent population or people who need you, then go and open your practice in a wealthy area and deal with those people. But we have to take care of our populations who need us.
Yes, we do. And I'm so glad that you are doing that. You are doing that work. And I know when you've come to Minnesota, we've pulled you to do screenings for blood pressure and black women and education and training. And so if there's somebody who's listening, a doctor, a hospital system, and they say, you know what, we need somebody like that, who is passionate, who speaks from experience, who've gone through it. You're not just talking about what you read in a book or what you were trained on or what you heard. You actually lost a child shortly after childbirth. childbirth. You are a nurse. You work in healthcare. How can they reach you? How can they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through Facebook. I have Darcia Handy. I'm Darcia Handy on Facebook. They can reach out to me through my Gmail account, which is DarciaHandy@gmail.com. Let's say Facebook, Gmail. Oh, and I also have a Life After Loss podcast. I have my Facebook page, Life After Loss. They can reach me there as well.
Mm-hmm. And you always respond right away, because I know that you, families reach out to you right away.
Yes.
As soon as this happens. And there's no 9 to 5 on that. This happens at 2
right.
in the morning. It happens at 3
That's
in the morning.
Right.
It happens at 6
That's
in the morning. And so you're there. So folks can always reach you on your social media, Darcia Handy. Very easy to find on Facebook. Also easy to find the Life After Loss podcast Facebook page and group, where it is a safe place to heal and grieve and cry. Darcia Handy, my sister, I thank you so much for talking to me today. It is a Saturday in Houston. I know this is when you do your errands and run out and visit our parents. But I just want to thank you for being on the show today and hanging out with me for a little bit.
Thank you. And congratulations again to you and Andrew. I'm just so proud. You know I am. I'm proud of both of you.
I know. I saw your Facebook post. I know. All right. Love you. We'll talk soon.
I love you too. Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And you all stick around. We've got more to come. I tell you what, my phone is blowing up. We've had some really good, informative chats with some great guests. And our conversations are so just real and authentic and engaging that folks forget that I'm actually working. And they are texting me now. Somebody wants to make sure to pass along my sister Darcia's information. They're saying, hey, when can I, how can I, what's the next time she's going to be out doing a training, or how can I hire her? And so I'm just reminding them how to spell her name, because somebody spelled the name wrong. So I'm just letting them know, hey, it's Darcia. If you want to reach out to her, and let her know that you need her services, and she will definitely reach back out to you right away. She has a commitment to helping parents whose children have died shortly after childbirth. And so I want to make sure that people are aware of that, because those calls and texts are coming in, and that is truly her ministry and what she does, not for a living, but that time that she gives away is volunteered. We are moving on. The train is on the track. We're moving on. It is 1:38. It is the Shaletta Show. I am still live at the Minnesota African American Heritage Museum and Gallery in Minneapolis on Penn Avenue. My son Andrew read his best-selling autism children's book. Andrew does his dance to teens and kids alike. Gave away a bunch of books, and if you want to get one for your library at home, your kiddo, it is available on Amazon. I know we all got the Prime, but I always tell people, please support our local bookstores. If you are in Stillwater, Gully Wobbles is there. If you are in St. Paul, Red Balloon Books has copies. And then Moon Palace Books in Minneapolis also has copies available. So please make your way over there. It does not have to be Autism Awareness Month for you to create awareness or acceptance for kids on the spectrum. Now, I got to tell you about speaking of kids and keeping them safe, the Minnesota Department of Health is working closely with Hennepin County Lead Removal Program. And what they're doing is they're working to provide information about the effects of lead poisoning in the home and how to identify and avoid it. And they also have other resources for home lead testing, as well as testing for children who may have been exposed to lead. Now, joining me is Duzong Yang, the lead and healthy homes educator for the Minnesota Department of Health. Duzong, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, tell us about your role. What is this Lead Healthy Homes Educator? What is that all about?
Yeah, so it's actually Lead and Healthy Homes Educator.
Okay.
And so basically I create and manage our Lead educational materials, including the translations. And we actually have 19 different languages available for our educational
wow.
materials. Yeah, and then I also do outreach. I communicate with clinics, providers, local public health, and the community on childhood lead poisoning prevention and blood lead testing.
And, you know, I was just talking to Carla Bingham. She was here talking about the food scraps program in Washington and Ramsey County. And she was talking about all the languages that the information is available in. And Duzong, you know, one of the things that I keep preaching is that if you don't have it available in my language, then I don't think it's for me. Talk to me about how important it is to have this information available in multiple languages so that more Minnesotans can participate.
Yeah, it's definitely really important because we're serving our community. And if we don't have these resources for them, how are they going to get the resources, right? And mm-hmm. so if people don't see their language or materials in their language, then they can also, like, let us know and be like, hey, I don't see this language. Can you consider adding it? We can definitely do that.
Now, when we start talking about healthy homes, what exactly do we mean? Because for me, I think healthy homes, you know, I don't have any sharp objects out. You know, I make sure that, you know, we've got gates up and, you know, for the kids who have autism to stay away. You know, I got the you know, the hazardous stuff up high or locked in a cabinet. But, you know, I want to make sure that I understand what you're talking about. What qualifies as a healthy home? Because you're a healthy home educator.
Yeah, and so to me, it's a hazard-free environment where children can thrive and grow without putting them at risk for developing health problems. And this could be, like, in their own home, at a daycare center. It's just an environment where it's hazard-free.
And that is so important for children in their growth and development. And my listeners have heard me talk about lead paint hazards before. But one topic we haven't covered is how eating and a healthy diet can help reduce the negative effects of lead exposure, especially in kids. And Duzong, you and I both know it is so much easier to just run out here and get some fast food, mm-hmm. especially during summer times because the schedule gets away. You know, we're managing the kids all day. It's just easier to run out and get a burger and some fries and a soda, a pop, or whatever. And, you know, we haven't really provided, you know, the basic food groups to our kids. I had to, when I knew you were coming on the show, girl, I had to convict myself and look back over the week and think, I have not made a carrot. I have not made a broccoli. I have not put any green beans in the steamer. And I have not done right by my kids. So I had to, like, get it together because I knew I was going to be talking to you and I didn't want to have to embarrass myself.
I feel you. I'm the one that created the fact sheet for that. And so I have to remind myself to, you know, have fruits and vegetables on my plate, too. So I totally understand.
Yeah. And eating healthy, those balanced meals, you know, what should we be looking out for? Because, you know, I don't care how many times we talk about it, but we always have to remind ourselves about the iron and the calcium and how it helps our body, especially if, you know, we're living in an older home and, you know, it may contain lead paint.
Yeah. So lead actually can easily get in to our bodies, like in our blood and bones. And so eating healthy, balanced meals that are rich in iron, calcium, and vitamin C regularly can help prevent lead from being absorbed into their blood and bones. And also, children with empty stomachs may absorb more lead than children with fuller stomachs. And so, you know, like, we really have to help our children eat regular, balanced meals throughout the day for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and even snacks in between meals. So food
now,
like... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, what kind of foods? That was my next question, girl. Get out of my head. Because, you know, we're not really looking at labels. We're just going through to the store. We're buying it. And I'm not saying that as parents, we're not being intentional, but we're busy. And so, you know, whatever information you can provide to us as we try to make sure our kids have that healthy breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it is really going to help us to become better parents and help them to be healthier.
Yeah, and so some examples of food that are rich in iron include red meat, fish, chicken, spinach. Food that are rich in calcium includes milk, yogurt, cheese, green leafy veggies. Foods that are rich in vitamin C include citrus fruits, bell peppers, broccoli, tomatoes. And those don't sound good for, you know, kids. They're not going to be like, ooh, I want tomatoes or snacks. So it's really hard and they're really picky. And some children also have like special dietary needs. And so if families, parents, they want more information about like what their child should eat, they should always consult with their doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But those are generally the things that, you know, should be on the plate.
Okay. Now, what are the tips? Because as a parent, I don't know it all. And I'm always looking for tips or tricks or good information to help me become a better parent. But what other tips can you provide for parents and caregivers who are concerned about lead exposure in their homes? I'm in North Minneapolis, and there are some older homes here. And I've, you know, been talking about this and trying to champion this cause. And, you know, some of the church members that I have say, you know, I've been in this house forever. I never thought about it until I heard you talking about it on the radio. And I have my grandkids every summer and on weekends, and I need to make sure that I get my house tested. I get my house checked because I don't want anything to happen to my grandkids.
Mm-hmm. So you can lower the risk of lead exposure in your home by keeping your home clean. So things like washing your child's hand, face, toys regularly, learn how to properly clean up lead dust in their home using the wet washing method, using a HEPA filter vacuum to vacuum. And if they work with lead or have hobbies that work with lead, then they should be washing their clothes that they wear when they're working with lead separately from regular clothes. And then in between the work clothes and the regular clothes, they should be doing an extra rinse cycle. So those are just like a few tips that people can follow. We have more tips on our fact sheet, which is called Cleaning Out Lead Dust in Your Home, and that's on our website.
Okay, give me that website, because somebody's going to email me, somebody's going to call me, somebody's going to need that information, and I want to make sure that they have it.
Yeah, so it's health.state.mn.us/lead, or you can just Google lead MDH and it should be the first link on the web browser.
Oh, that is so amazing. Thank you so much, Duzong Yang, for being here. You have really blessed us with this information. I also want to remind people about the window replacement program. Can you talk to me about that? Because, you know, people know that they have lead in the home, especially folks in Hennepin County in those older homes that were built before, what, 1970 something. And they say, well, you know, what am I going to do? I don't have no money. I don't have no money to fix this. I don't have no money for no new windows. You know, I just got to ride this out. I'm on a fixed income. But there's a program that they can take advantage of, right?
Yeah. So it's a little different for counties throughout Minnesota, but for Hennepin County residents specifically, Hennepin County does have a lead prevention program for their residents. They offer free in-home screening, lead-safe classes so that you can learn how to safely clean and renovate your home. They also have funding that can help cover the cost of repairing or removing lead from their home, which also includes the window replacement. I believe it's like up to 15,000. But then there's an intake form that residents will have to fill out to see if they qualify. So they can just go on Hennepin County's website to fill out that form and to also get more information on eligibility.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for being here, giving us all this information. You have really been a blessing to our listeners, especially those with children, especially those in older homes, passing along this information to them. Du Zong Yang, thank you so much for being on the Shaletta Show.
Yeah, no problem. And can I also mention one more thing before I go?
Sure, yeah.
So I just want to remind families that the only way to know if their children have been exposed to lead is to get a blood lead test. And okay. In Minnesota, we recommend that all children should be tested at age 12 months and 24 months. And if they haven't had one by the time they're age 3, or if their parents are concerned about lead exposure, they can talk to the doctors mm-hmm. about getting one.
Yes, and you can do that at your annual checkup with your pediatrician. You know, before we send our kids back to school, a lot of us have to go get asthma action plans, medication forms, do those annual physicals, especially if they're going to be participating in sports. And that is a good time to get that done. Thank you for that reminder, Du Zong.
No problem.
And you all stick around. We've got more to come. I'm coming out, baby. Oh, yes, I am coming out. Today is an amazing day. I'm coming out. That's my theme song, Josh. You just lit a fire under my butt.
Let's go.
I cannot wait to tell y'all this. I've been waiting to tell y'all this all morning long. I am in USA Today. Yes, USA Today. I got a call earlier this week from one of the reporters at USA Today, and she said, "We've seen your Spread Love with Locks program, Miss Brundage, how you are taking and buying these interior combination door locks that you found on Amazon for moms and dads who have kids with autism who wander to keep them safe from drowning. And we want to do a story about it." And I was like, oh, my God. Yes. Yes, honey. So this morning at 7 o'clock when I woke up and I got on USA Today, guess whose big old face was on there? Mm-hmm. Mine. Yes. Yes, that was me. Yes, that was me. And she just did this amazing write up and article. Kudos to the writer, the columnist who did the story. But she did an amazing job sharing my family story. You know, about how, you know, we've got the 3 kids with autism, 4 total, 3 with autism, and how, you know, their journey and how Daniel used to wander. And, you know, we put the gates up, then he started crawling over the gates, and then we put the deadbolt up, and he was able to, you know, get the key and open it up. And then we put a latch on top and he popped the lock, and how, you know, I would, you know, have to have him hold me from the back while I wash dishes because I couldn't turn my back on him. And he would elope from the house and run down the street, and the neighbors would bring him back. And, you know, and so, you know, I found these interior combination door locks, and I've been buying them and going to different cities and donating them to parents who have kids with autism. And so that story is in USA Today. It posted this morning by Celine Martin. Look for it. It says, this Minnesota mother wants to save autistic children from drowning one city at a time. And the mother they are talking about, honey, is none other than me. We'll be back.